from Vermont Public. This is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Tuesday, December 17th, and here are today's headlines. 38-year-old Scott Mason faces a charge of first-degree attempted murder and aggravated assault on a law enforcement officer. He faces a life sentence if convicted. Mason allegedly shot St. Johnsbury Police Captain Jason Gray on Friday afternoon when Gray responded to a domestic violence incident at Mason's apartment. Gray is a nearly 25-year veteran of the department and is hospitalized at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center in serious but stable condition. That's according to Vermont State Police. St. Johnsbury Police Chief Joel Pierce, speaking with reporters on Sunday, said the shooting has rocked the town.
Everybody knows who Jason is. Everybody knows Captain Gray. They know his style, and they have shown nothing but a large amount of support for us.
Mason is being held in prison without bail. Governor Phil Scott says state-run shelters should be a core part of Vermont's plan to address homelessness in the future. The state opened shelters for unhoused families in Williston and Waterbury about a month and a half ago, right after a wave of evictions from Vermont's motel program. Scott has long been a proponent of decreasing funding for the state's motel voucher program. He didn't mince words about it on Vermont Edition on Monday.
The motel program was a failure. It didn't lift them out of homelessness. It just, put them in a warehouse, them in a hotel. But for instance, with the family shelters we have in Williston and Waterbury, it's going to be helpful because we have more eyes on them. We're able to identify their needs. That part has been successful.
Both Scott and leaders in the state Senate say addressing homelessness and lack of affordable housing options will be a priority during the next legislative session. The Chittenden Solid Waste District is looking for another site to build its new recycle center. The district originally planned to build off of Williston's Redmond Road, but two summers of heavy rain have led new types of vegetation to take over, turning the area into a wetland. That's in contrast to when officials initially surveyed the site in 2020 during a drought, before securing a $22 million bond for the project. The Williston Observer reports the district is now searching for a new location to build the center, pushing the opening date to mid-2026. The Agency of Transportation is moving ahead with a federal electric vehicle charging program that's more than a year behind schedule. Patrick Murphy is with V-Trans and says the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure, or NEVI, program will eventually help fund 15 charging stations along busy public highways in Vermont.
It's a very different model than what we've had in the past, and I think that's resulted in sort of a longer runway for this program.
Vermont opened its first NEVI charger in Bradford earlier this year. Murphy says EV charging technology is changing quickly, and it's also taking time to find highway-adjacent private land that's convenient and safe for using the chargers. Coming up, as part of our recurring series on class, Vermont Public's Erica Heilman speaks with a retired state police trooper about the assumptions people make regarding law enforcement. That's after this.
The Frequency is sponsored by the Autosaver Group's year-end sales event going on now at all 15 dealerships in Vermont and Western New Hampshire. Savings on their entire lineup, from trucks, SUVs, and EVs to fuel-efficient cars and family-friendly models. Inventory from all stores at autosavergroup.com. And Gills Point S Tire and Auto Service, offering tire and brake service, oil changes, and state inspections. Online at gillspointstire.com.
Ingrid Jonas is a retired Vermont State Police trooper. She started on patrol but worked as a detective for most of her career. Vermont Public reporter Erica Heilman sat down with her on her couch and they talked for a while about class assumptions in law enforcement.
I think that the world that I interacted with made assumptions about the class of your typical police officer. Perhaps you didn't have a higher education. You know, you graduated from high school. You might have gotten a degree or not, but it wasn't required. And that cops were more like blue collar or middle or lower middle class. The job itself is like seen or had been seen as really honorable, that it was like a good way to earn a pension, things that you could rely on when you got older if you didn't have a lot of money coming your way from your relatives when they died.
So you imagine that people assume when they are policeman's coming up to the door of their car, that this might be somebody who doesn't have a higher education. Those are some of the assumptions.
Right. And I'm also have assumptions going into this conversation, right? Like in my mind, cops are like really street smart and they're savvy and they're willing to ask super hard questions. They're willing to be on the front lines of stuff that's going on in their state or their community. Like being willing to look at dead bodies, figure out who killed the dead body, talking to all kinds of people, going into their houses, being on the front lines of stuff. Whereas if you're from a wealthier class, you have other people do that shit for you. That's kind of how I see it through my own bias. We're out here doing your dirty work, and sometimes you hate us for it. That's it.
Did you feel like when you entered law enforcement that you were kind of getting a new perspective on the way the world looks at class?
I was just intrigued by the idea of being a detective someday, right? Like that was what really motivated me, just to like solve crimes and catch bad guys. And then somehow my college found out that I had become a cop and they wanted me to come back and talk to them about being a cop. I was like, wow, okay. Because no other person had ever graduated from my college at the time who became a cop. And I was like, that's interesting. So I went and spoke on this panel and it was lawyers. There were a lot of actors and actresses. And I felt like I was a lesser class than they saw themselves as being in, because I was talking about the gritty aspects of being a cop.
You're talking about dead bodies.
Right. And they were talking about like intellectual property law. And also, I was from Vermont, which also had a class assumption. I remember people being like, well, what do your parents do? Do they like work at a ski area? And I was like, what? What do you mean? Like people just thought they must just have to work at ski areas in Vermont, because that's all they had ever done in Vermont, was just come there and go skiing.
Did rich people ever treat you when you were in law enforcement? Did you ever get vibed by people for class reasons?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely some of that on patrol. Like, you would stop a car for speeding and you'd get the vibe that this was a wealthy person or people. Like, depending on the make and model of the car, just the attitude of the drivers, there was definitely condescension for sure. Like, I'm just a dumb cop that's stopping you for speeding and you're on your way to or from Montreal and can't be bothered with this ticket or, you know. But, I mean, there was definitely that. And cops would do it to certain people that we would go to over and over again who were in extreme poverty. And I would just be like, there would be that class dynamic of us coming in with authority and they'd see us as messing with their life and making things harder for them and arresting them for stuff that they weren't going to be able to afford to get a good lawyer to get them out of it. And then there was like, you know, some of the sexual assault cases where you would get a call, because you know it's happening in all classes, right? Sexual assault, but certain classes have insulation more so than others, right? Like, so when you would catch a case where the perpetrator was wealthy, you could really feel the difference where lawyers really quickly shutting things down and a lot of cleanup happening much quicker than you would ever see in your more typical cases. It was not just a myth that wealthier perpetrators got better deals. And it probably had to do with their ability to pay for attorneys. And then attorneys, that's a whole other class thing. Like just the way attorneys would treat officers, there was, I think, assumptions probably that we all made of each other. But definitely, I think attorneys would assume that cops weren't as bright as we were sometimes.
Did cops make assumptions about attorneys?
Oh my God, definitely. Yeah. I mean, everybody makes assumptions about attorneys. They kind of signed up for that, I think.
What class are you now?
Me? I am in a comfortable class, comfortable middle class. That's kind of how I see myself. Like, I'm not poor. I'm not loaded.
You ever buy expensive condiments?
Definitely. Yeah, I buy some expensive condiments. I have a CSA share. I don't know. I only have one bathroom in my house. If I was higher class, I could have two bathrooms or even a 2.5 bathrooms. Or I could have an ensuite bathroom. I just learned what an ensuite is. It's like a bathroom in your bedroom. I was at a book reading retreat and I didn't know what the ensuite meant. So I asked the person at the retreat.
And they were like, you must be a cop.
You must be a cop. You dumb cop.
This is Erica Heilman with Vermont Public.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Leah Melder Connors, Michaela Lafrak, Adia Golston, and Howard Weisthisman. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Talk to you tomorrow.
Every episode of Brave Little State begins with a question about Vermont that's been submitted and voted on by listeners like you. What happened to all the restaurant workers? What's the deal with Vermont's fire towers? Why do people like the band Phish? Follow Brave Little State wherever you get podcasts. From Vermont Public, part of the NPR network.